my funny Valentine.
Now, as a music student, when you start learning jazz, one of the first things you're told is to forget your score. Forget the sheet music you've relied on for so long. You need to store your modes and scales in your head. You need to be able to read a chord progression and improvise on the spot for the rest of your life. It's a scary prospect for any classically trained musician, and it takes an incredible amount of discipline and tenacity. And this weekend, Perth will be filled with the most acrobatic jazz brains in the business, and one of them is Roscoe James Irwin of Cat Empire fame. He will perform Lost in a Dream, the musical life of Chet Baker, with a 20-piece string orchestra. G'day, Roscoe.
Hey, how you doing?
This is the one I've been looking forward to all week long. You have been to Perth before for jazz purposes, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been here to work with Wajo a couple of times, actually, which is run by Mace Francis, who's also the artistic director of Perth International Jazz Festival. I've been here, but it's been a while since I've been here, so it's good to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you in town. We turned up the heat for you.
So yep, certainly did.
I'm glad you're inside for this show. Let's talk a bit about the role that jazz played in your household, because I know that you basically grew up in a homemade orchestra. Your family is so talented. And your green room was the Dandenong Rangers, no less. What did your house sound like?
Well, it might not be quite as, you know, as rambunctious as it sounds when you think about it, but Mum, there was always singing in the house because Mum's a classical singer, and she was always teaching and having people. And then when my uncle would come to town, my Mum's brother, he's a jazz trumpet player, so there was that as well. And Dad's a real folky, so he was always listening to folk music, and so really kind of eclectic mix of different things kind of coming in and out of the house. And yeah, my step family as well were all piano players, brass players, singers, like all sorts of stuff.
Is there anyone in the family who isn't a musician? Did anyone escape it?
Well, Dad isn't a musician.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. But everyone else. Yeah.
When did you know you wanted to play trumpet?
I can't remember choosing it myself. I started playing when I was maybe 8. I was already playing a bit of piano, but I think it was probably just because Uncle John played trumpet. So it was just something that happened. And also my stepfamily had just sort of come on the scene at that stage, and there were some brass players there. So I think it just became, you know, I played cornet first, like, you know, which is like a shorter trumpet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was just something that got thrust into my hands, and yeah, I don't ever remember specifically picking it though.
What did you think of Uncle John's playing?
Oh, I always like Uncle John. He's a bit of a lunatic.
okay,
he lives in Brazil now. Okay. Yeah, he's a you know, an unusual guy.
So you can say that.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. I don't think he'd have any problem with that. He'd have a hard time denying it. But it was different because Mum was a classical singer and I learned classical piano, but Uncle John was a jazz musician. So that was a different thing, you know, like a different sound. So especially once I got a little bit older, like maybe 10, 11, 12, and I started to listen to jazz and hear those sounds, like he ended up being sort of he sort of loomed larger than life for me as a musician. Also because he didn't live in Melbourne, so he'd sort of like blow through our house a couple of times a year, and then
literally,
you know, yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think it was probably him that got me really into jazz, probably initially. Yeah.
So when did you first learn to improvise? That's arguably one of the hardest things that comes with being a jazz musician.
Yeah, I think it was probably, I started playing around with it probably my first year at high school. So it would have been 12 or maybe, no, yeah, 12, I think. I think I just started before the insecurities of, you know, being a teenage human set in, which is great for improvising. I didn't care whether it sounded bad. I didn't care whether it was right. I just wanted to do it, which is a great place to be, a great headspace to be in when you're first learning to improvise, to that willingness to make sound and to sort of and to go for ideas even though you don't know what could happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's 23 minutes to 9 on ABC Radio Perth. My guest is Roscoe James Irwin from the Cat Empire. He is performing the works of Chet Baker at Perth's International Jazz Festival. So, I mean, how normal was it for you to be on stage then when you were quite young? By the time you were 15, did crowds make you nervous?
Crowds didn't make me nervous. The context made me nervous. So, and I still have that now. I can play to a room with 20 people and it'd be much more nervous than going out on stage in front of 20,000 with the Cat Empire.
Why is that?
I'm not sure. I mean, sometimes the smaller the crowd, the more nerve-wracking it is, the more intimate it is. It's like the room's quiet. And like I said, the context. Like when I first performed this Chet show earlier this year, yeah, it was just the first time it had happened. So the unfamiliarity made it feel nerve-wracking in its own way. But no, I mean, I've been on stage since I was 8 or 9 years old, so there's a certain level of comfort there. But yeah, I think the context makes a huge difference for me, rather than the crowd size or anything like that. Mm. Yeah,
I can tell you from a presenter's point of view, ABC listeners go wild for your music. It transcends generations and individual tastes. You found a way to mix big brass back into our daily lives. So when are you at peak composing mode? Because obviously doing these works of Chet Baker's, you would have had to really, you know, knuckle down.
Yeah, I guess when I'm off, not on tour with the Cat Empire, like most of my time is spent out in the Dandenong Ranges, and I'm right on the edge of the forest there, and it's a beautiful community out there. But also, I can hunker down in my house and just write and play piano and work on music if I want to. So I always, you know, I'll make sure I give myself blocks of time where I can, you know, basically be Howard Hughes out there and just work and just write. Which is what I did for this show.
Do you ever go tap mum on the shoulder and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of this tonality?
No,
what do you think of this riff?
No, I'm quite... Oh. Yeah. I mean, we talk about all the projects I'm doing, of course. You know, like I talk to my family a lot about that, about what I'm doing and if I'm struggling with it or whatever, but it's never that kind of thing.
Because you get the most honest critiques from your family because they're not going to hold back.
I know what my mum would say. She'd be like, oh, well, I don't know, just whatever you think. You know?
This weekend you will present your reworkings of classic material from Chet Baker. What did you learn about him during this process?
I mean, I guess I just went deeper into... He's a really interesting figure, actually, because on the surface, if people just know the surface level of his sort of fame and his sound, and his voice is very distinctive and his trumpet playing was very distinctive, and he made certain standards his standards.
Like My Funny Valentine, which I played at the start, yep.
You know, I Fall in Love Too Easily and It's Always You. They're kind of... other people do those songs, but they're kind of quintessentially Chet tunes, even though he didn't write them, of course. But he was a really interesting guy, and it's a really sad and complicated sort of tale when you actually go through his life and hear more about his personal life and the way he grew up, and then the struggles he had, you know, and the flaws in his, you know, his personality. Like, he certainly wasn't an angel, which a lot of people kind of imagine he was because of the sound they hear from him.
Yes.
Which is one of the great things and most interesting things about him, is that juxtaposition between this kind of, in some ways, volatile personality, but also a very, you know, a pretty broken guy in a lot of ways, and who struggled with, you know, substance abuse, and he had his teeth knocked out in the late 60s and had to... and then, you know, didn't know whether you'd ever play trumpet again, had to relearn how to play the instrument with dentures and...
Wow, that's a big deal when it comes to your embouchure.
Yeah,
how
for
did you
sure.
get them knocked out? I didn't know that.
Oh, by drug dealers who he owed money to.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the story he told was always different from that, but the one that's been sort of cobbled together by other people was that it wasn't just as simple as someone decided they wanted to beat him up. There was some other agenda there. But there's like everything... That's the other fascinating thing about Chet. I've never read anything about him and then not heard a contradicting story about that. His death's a really interesting one as well.
How so?
Well, they found him at the, you know, on very sadly in the late 80s on the ground, like he'd fallen out of his hotel room window in Amsterdam.
Mm.
But of course there's people, because he'd been beaten up before and had problems in that kind of that world, people were wondering whether he'd been pushed. People were wondering whether he'd just been, you know, high and fallen out.
Yep.
And the story that seems most actually accurate, but is kind of strange as well, is that he locked himself out of his room and went into one of his bandmates' room, which was next door, and tried to climb across the balcony and fell. But there's all sorts, and then there's, you know, of course, the theories that he jumped, you know, and he committed suicide. So it's a really sad and fascinating guy when you go into it. Yeah.
So I suppose what will make your show different to the other tributes? How have you approached his pieces? What will people hear?
Well, when I first, I mean, I've thought about it for years that I wanted to do it, you know, like I thought it made sense to me to do that show because his voice, you know, and his trumpet playing both resonated with me and the way I play and sing. And
you look like him as well, if you don't mind me saying. You have that 50s movie star look about you.
I think if you actually saw his face next to my face, it's not. It's not that close.
Oh, it's not bad. You know.
Yeah.
That's all right. Continue.
We both have heads.
Well said, Roscoe.
But yeah, I'm sure a lot of people, especially people who are music fans or musicians themselves, probably saw, a Chet Baker tribute, and it seems like it's like it. A lot of them have happened before. Like people, it's a common thing that people do because he's such a revered figure in so many ways. But really, when you think about it, what he did was he played standards. Like he made them his. So if someone's puts together a quartet or something, and there's been lots of beautiful small Chet tributes where it's that. But essentially, it would be me on stage playing standards with a rhythm section or something, and that's happened a lot. And I really wanted the experience to be a bit more transportative, you know, for the audience. So that's why I thought with a string orchestra, with a certain kind, like I want it to feel like hazy. I want people to be able to drift off into sort of feeling like it's that era and that thing. And also there's just so much emotive output you can get out of a large ensemble. And that's kind of my thing. Most of my work, you know, outside of the Cat Empire, is arranging and orchestrating for large ensembles. That's kind of my main thing, even more than my trumpet playing or anything like that. So it made sense to sort of incorporate that into this, and I just really wanted to be able to tell a story that was more than just, you know, me with a rhythm section. And, yeah, and I think it's, you know, these orchestral sort of moments and things that can push and pull it and make it, yeah, just make it a little bit more immersive, I think, musically for people.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be that way. 20 pieces all in front of you. Are you nervous?
Maybe a little.
Yeah?
I've done the show twice before. I did it at the Adelaide Cabaret Festival earlier this year for two shows, and it was great. Yeah. You know, I had so much fun. So
it's going to be electric. I'm really excited for you because you've got some really talented people behind you, and you put together some amazing arrangements from everything I've heard. So hey, thanks for coming in. Good luck tonight.
No worries. Thanks for having me.